All right, so to round out this slide, as we mentioned, GoodCo could also reincorporate into a different state after it made its little wash through Texas. And the BADCO could also reincorporate somewhere else in case it wants to take advantage of, you know, a particular venue for its bankruptcy case.
It's kind of like, I don't know if they still do this, but long ago I used to be a transactional lawyer, and a lot of times you would fly planes into Texas and transfer title because of sales tax reasons and then fly them out. And I guess that's what's happening here.
Well, I don't, you know.
I don't want to put you on the spot, Ted.
Look, I happen to think it's a great, and we argued this, I mean, just a quick aside, in the LTL bankruptcy, and I think it was mentioned, full disclosure, I represent J&J, not in LTL, but I represent J&J and LTL in the Imerys bankruptcy. In the Imerys bankruptcy, the creditors and the debtor there tried to actually get an injunction to prevent the LTL bankruptcy from happening, and we defeated that by arguing appropriately that, look, there's a statute out there. It's, you know, it's the law in Texas. We're allowed to do that. And if we do it and then file for bankruptcy and somebody has a problem with it, they can address it like they are. In LTL, they move to dismiss on bad faith. And so, you know, there's a law that was passed. We're taking advantage of the laws that exist. And if, you know, we're right, then it's appropriate. And if the plaintiffs win and get it reversed, then we'll find out about it. But there's nothing wrong with using statutes that exist to, you know, try to manage your liabilities.
Isn't that what Judge Kaplan said in his decision on denying dismissal?
That's what Kaplan said, and hopefully the Third Circuit will see it the same way. And we were just commenting that we were checking to see if a decision came out while we were sitting here. So far, no. But we'll see. I mean, the Third Circuit's going to decide that issue and the related issue that we'll talk about in a bit about the injunction, which is just as important, in my opinion.
I mean, I may be the dissent on a 2-to-1 panel here, but I'm not exactly sure that just because a statute exists, it can be taken advantage of consistent with the good faith notions of the code. Again, Ted disclosed, I'll disclose, I was a group of academics that filed an amicus brief both at the trial level and at the Third Circuit level saying that all of this is, or at least LTL, is a classic example of a bad faith filing and ought to be dismissed.
Okay, now that we know what it is, let's talk briefly about why it's being used. Should be apparent to you by now, but it's especially relevant in mass tort cases because you can slide off the mass tort liabilities and deal with that in a separate entity that files bankruptcy. And it's argued that it creates an efficient forum for resolving tort claims in the bankruptcy system. And these claims would maybe be debilitating to the company that kind of wants to spin off the liabilities. And we put here as an example in the LTL case the number and magnitude of cases that Johnson & Johnson was facing prior to their Texas two-step and, you know, why they were interested in doing this. And another argument is this also avoids sort of inconsistent results in the tort system where one plaintiff may knock it out of the park and get a great judgment, and another plaintiff, perhaps similarly situated, would get zero. And so the argument is, in a bankruptcy context, there's more equality in distribution to these claimants. And finally, the other argument is that GoodCo stays out of Chapter 11, can continue to operate. Yeah,
it's still connected to Chapter 11.
Well,
let's be clear there.
We're getting there.
Yeah.
It can still operate out of Chapter 11 and doesn't suffer the burden of being in Chapter 11 and dealing with all the issues we have to deal with, but also has a funding agreement that we'll talk about later to make sure it does fund the claims. But I guess the first question is, shouldn't GoodCo have to file Chapter 11 to get the benefits of Chapter 11?
Well, the one number I would say that's not on the chart that's relevant to that is $435 billion. $435 billion is the net worth, or was the net worth, the market value of J&J when it did this spinoff. This is not a case in which one could say, you have to do this in order to preserve J&J. J&J is a very substantial company. And the spinoff of the cases here, it's a weak case at best for the preservation of the type of things that bankruptcy is meant to preserve, jobs, value and the like. And, you know, I wonder whether or not, again, where my earlier intervention, whether if taking advantage of a statute to achieve these purposes is really something we want to do in the bankruptcy code. I'll have more to say later about the tort system and how it interacts there. But for now, I mean, I think you could pick some cases in which we could use the facts a little bit better for the Texas two-step here. J&J just rubs me the wrong way.
So, and this is why facts matter, because J&J is not the entity that did the two-step. JJCI, which was the Consumer Inc. entity, so J&J writ large, a big company, is really not the entity that did this. And so, and JJCI took a big $2.2 billion hit that it couldn't get review at the Supreme Court. So as Judge Kaplan found, there was financial distress. There are 40, actually the number is higher than 38,000. There are like 40-some-odd thousand cases. So, you know, JJCI had real financial distress, and J&J, as a shareholder of that entity, had no obligation to bail it out. So, you know, don't believe everything you read in the press.
Oh, J&J is going to let its consumer division go?
They might. You know, it was $61 billion. It wasn't $435. So, you know, the facts matter, and it's easy to vilify large corporations. But, you know, I think when you look, and Judge Kaplan dispassionately walked through and ruled in LTL's favor. So we'll see what happens.
Listen, I think...